Do you watch golf or do you watch Tiger? News yesterday that the world's number one golfer needs more knee surgery and will be out for the rest of this season. But the phenomenon that writer Chip Brown calls the Tiger era is still going strong. Woods won the U.S. Open in a 19-hole playoff on Monday with, as we all learned later, two stress fractures in his left tibia as well as the knee injury. He called it his greatest victory, and it seems likely to add to his legend. The wunderkind, the phenomenon, the man who redeemed the racist history of his sport and then proceeded to transcend it. So, do you watch golf or do you watch Tiger? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Chip Brown joins us from our bureau in New York. He spent some time following Tiger Woods and wrote the cover story about him for the June issue of Play, the New York Times sports magazine. And nice to have you on the Talk of the Nation today.
It's nice to be here.
And so what do you think? Do we watch golf or do we watch Tiger?
Well, both, but obviously watching Tiger because there's something called the Tiger Effect. And, you know, there's the traditional numbers like Tiger in his 12 years on the PGA Tour has tripled the prize money. But there's some, and the TV audiences are now 29% higher when he's in the tournament. But there are some two interesting new details on the Tiger Effect that I just came across. One, there's a study by a woman in Berkeley who found that other golfers perform two tenths of a stroke worse when Tiger's playing. And this has added, she calculates, in a seven-year period, about $5 million to his earnings. And then there's the latest Tiger Effect number, which I find wonderful, which was that Monday, between 12 and 4, the trading on the New York Stock Exchange dropped by 9.2%, and there were 71.8 million fewer shares traded because apparently everybody was on the floor was watching Tiger Woods.
At Torrey Pines in that playoff with Rocco Mediate, which then went to sudden death hole one more time, one more unbelievable performance by Tiger Woods. One of the interesting things about your article about him, though, I found was that this is a person who part of his charm is that he has seemed so emotionally accessible when he's on the golf course, yet he is so reserved off of it.
Yeah. Well, he's reserved off of it because if he weren't, he'd be torn to pieces by Day of the Locust type fans. I mean, you know, he can't go anywhere without people baying for autographs and pleading for his moment of his time. So I think he's had to learn the hard way the cost of being, you know, as famous as he is. He's the most famous athlete in the world now.
Yeah. And building what you describe as the fortress of solitude in Florida.
Yeah. Yes, it is a fort. It's on Jupiter Island, which is a zip code that you could only dream about living in, I guess.
As you followed him around, did you find him accessible? Was he willing to talk and open himself up?
He talked to the media, print media in group interviews, not one-on-one. I followed him for two stops in the PGA Tour. And the last interview he gave to a print journalist that I can tell, I mean, other than occasionally people will catch him on the range and stuff, but this is typical of the trend is that he gave 10 minutes to a guy from Sports Illustrated in 2000 or maybe it was 2006. I'm not sure which, but I thought 10 minutes, what would I do with 10 minutes? And my first goal would be to get 20 minutes or figure out how to double the time because you can't really learn anything from him in 10 minutes. And he's gotten so good at saying nothing. You know, he doesn't, there's no percentage in him saying anything to anybody that isn't on tape or that he doesn't control in some way. And even in the television interviews, he speaks by deflecting and in generalities, and he doesn't really delve into things. I mean, he doesn't need to, and it's not in his nature, I don't think.
Or in his interest in some ways. I mean,
definitely it's not in his interest.
Yeah, you described that that feeling that a lot of people had when he came on the scene at first, that his father would call him the chosen one,
yeah,
and that this would be something of a social commitment as well, and that has quickly gone away.
That is. His father sort of had an older agenda, I think, for him, and it was definitely not a post-racial agenda. I think he has sort of moved away from that. He's certainly committed to his charities. He raises millions of dollars a year for his children's learning center, the Tiger Woods Learning Center in Anaheim, and is starting another one in Washington. But he doesn't want the he doesn't want the onus or the mantle that that was put onto him. I mean, he wants to be a golfer. He doesn't like it or not, that's he gets expectations are put on him for something else. But he kind of always is trying to revert to this notion that he's just a golfer.
We're talking with Chip Brown, who wrote the cover story in June for Play, the New York Times sports magazine, about, well, Tiger Woods. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Karen is on the line. Karen calling us from Franklinville in New Jersey.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
I watch for Tiger. I mean, I watch because I watch golf because my husband watches golf and I have to watch golf, but if I want to be with him. But I'm always rooting for Tiger, and I will always pick Tiger over anybody else that's out there.
And what makes you so attracted to him, do you think? Is it just because he's such a wonderful player?
His talent, and I feel like he got some really bad press at the very beginning where he was attacked for his every nuance of a word when he was still very young and very new. And it's like at that point I felt emotionally that he was the underdog. And once I sunk my teeth in, now I just love him.
Okay, Karen. Thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
And have a good summer watching golf without Tiger.
Oh, yep, I will anyway.
Now, here's an email we have from Sherry in Cleveland. I've always hated golf, but since Tiger Woods came on board, I love watching him. She wrote that in caps. I do not watch anyone else. They're boring with no emotion. Now, if Rocco plays again, I will watch Mr. Happy Feet. I enjoyed watching him constantly moving his feet when getting ready to tee off, and he seems animated. And Rocco Media did probably more for himself than any second finisher in a long time.
Yeah, he did. And he took over Phil Mickelson's role as the people's champion. But he needs Tiger Woods to be the foil. He's the foil for Tiger Woods. And without Tiger Woods, I don't know that people would be as interested in Rocco Media. You wouldn't have the underdog going up against the man who's been the number one player for 500 weeks, can that be right? Yeah,
500 weeks he's number
500
one.
500 weeks, yeah.
And even if he does sit out the rest of the year and so doesn't earn any more money or win any more tournaments, would he still be number one at the end of this
year? I think his lead is so large. I think he's almost twice as large in terms of, yes, he'll survive as number one even if he doesn't play again the rest of the year. One interesting statistic I saw today was he's won more majors than the next top 20 players in the world ranking, so all together. And you take those 20 people and put all their majors together, and Woods is one more.
And though you have to worry that this knee could be chronic if it continues and really make him erode his game prematurely, he is now entering what for most golfers is his prime.
Yeah, and it's weirdly it's this is what the year that everybody thought was going to be one of his great years. It was age 32 was one of Nicklaus's great years, and this is when you're supposed to get the young jitters out of the way and know what you're doing and combine physical prowess with mental acuity. And here mortality just bites him right in the left knee, and that's always, that's interesting. I mean, it's made him in some ways greater and more. It certainly made his triumph on last Sunday fantastic. Somebody called it. Oh, a guy on the PGA, one of columnists said it was one of the greatest acts of on-field mental and physical toughness in the history of sports. And it also has taken out this idea that golf, which I think is a real canard anyway. Golf isn't an athlete. It doesn't require athleticism. It's not a sport.
It's a game.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, go walk 4 hours playing 18 holes under that kind of pressure with two broken cracks in your tibia and say it's not a, it's just a game is ridiculous.
Let's get one last caller in. Dylan. Dylan calling us from San Francisco.
Yeah, I was actually at the Open Saturday, Sunday, and stayed for the playoff on Monday. I was at the 18th green both on Sunday and Monday, and I witnessed, you know, the most incredible display of golf, you know, I've ever seen. And I guess my question about Tiger is, as he gets older and matures, I mean, he's clearly the best golfer of all time, but what is his legacy going to be as far as social issues? I mean, I think there seem to be two schools of thought. There's the Muhammad Ali, where he really took his platform and pushed some social agendas, and then there's sort of Michael Jordan, where he kind of stays in the background and really hasn't done much to progress social issues. So, wondering what the author thinks about that.
He's in the Jordan camp, but I don't think he's as quite as strictly apolitical as Jordan is. I mean, I think Woods had, and when he first came out, he had a very activist ad from Nike that said, "Are you ready for me? There are courses where I can't play because of the color of my skin." And that was quickly withdrawn because it just wasn't very sales-friendly to people that were buying golf balls and bags and clubs and stuff. But, you know, it's unclear. What he does after golf, he may do as vigorously and as competitively as he's is what he's doing in golf, and he seems to care a lot about children's issues. I mean, it's a very, in some sense, a safe charity, but it's you know, it's just too soon to tell. I mean, he's driven.
Might have been interesting to see what would have happened if Nike made a lot of money selling boxing gloves. Anyway, yeah. Dylan, very much for the call.
That's a good
thank
point.
You.
Chip Brown, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure, thank you.
Chip Brown wrote the June cover story for Play, the New York Times sports magazine, about Tiger Woods, and he joined us today from NPR's Bureau in New York. Ira Flatow will be here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll see you again on Monday. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.